Canucks Central Friday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We are in the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. Lots to come on the program. Yannick Hansen will join us, Friday analyst here on Canucks Central. Also, a mailbag. Yes, Mailbag Friday is coming your way in the second hour of the program. If you haven't yet, you can send over some questions at Satyar Shah on Twitter. Our producer Josh will compile the best ones, and we will answer, or do our best to answer. Sometimes we don't go as thorough and full into detail as the Leafs president, Brendan Shanahan, did today about the conscious uncoupling they had with Kyle Dubas. Actually, I guess it was not a conscious uncoupling.
No, unconscious uncoupling.
Yes, it was an unconscious
uncoupling. Unconscious or conscious uncoupling. But yes, I mean, we've seen a lot of management changes.
Yes.
And we had some discussions about this, obviously, this week and everything Kyle Dubas said. And one of the questions I had, and I'm like, and it, totally, of course.
Yeah.
Hey, money matters. I mean, family matters, right? Because he wondered how his family's been a tough year for them and how they handle it. So my question was, what does he want to get paid? What's his price then to come back?
Yeah.
Because everybody has a price. So you'll eat something you don't want to eat if they pay you enough.
Yep.
Right?
So he had a price.
He named the price yesterday.
Yeah.
And Dubas said no.
Yeah.
Shanahan.
Shanahan was like, nah.
We're good.
I think we're moving on.
One playoff round is not going to give you enough.
It's nice for once that the Canucks president isn't being told he's a little bit too honest in the media.
Oh, Jim Rutherford, yes. Brendan Shanahan, much like Jim Rutherford, stayed away from the end-of-season media availability.
Yes.
So he didn't speak.
No, he wanted clarity on Dubas before speaking.
Yes, so he didn't speak. So he waited, let Dubas have his moment, and then he spoke very, very honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And it came off as a little bit jilted.
Yes.
Slightly.
I'd say so. He's not the happiest camper, I don't think. But it is just nice, just from a... The Canucks aren't under the spotlight of hockey Twitter for once.
No.
It is elsewhere, and that's something that happened maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah. And I mean, I was musing earlier today, just wondering, because you know, I wonder a lot. And one of the things I wondered about was Jim Benning. You know what Toronto needs?
Well,
they need meat and potatoes.
Yep. They need a GM who's got experience.
Yeah. That values bottom six players.
Yes. I don't know. I don't even know if I can go down this road. We could talk about a lot of retread GMs that could possibly be in town for Toronto.
I'm just wondering. I know there are articles that have been written, and Jim Benning's been mentioned as somebody to replace Dubas. That's not me. I'm wondering what Jim Benning's up to. That's all.
Was it like the same story as the one that said Surrey's getting the Arizona Coyotes?
Yes. Cannot confirm nor deny. This was on Western Standard or whatever that publication is.
It's... It is kind of interesting how it all played out, of course. And, you know, it is Canuck Central, so there is a tie in here because there's a lot of speculation as to what the next steps are for the Maple Leafs and trade proposals flying around all over the place of what the next GM of the Maple Leafs could do. And guess who came under the crosshairs? Your Vancouver Canucks did.
Well, of course. I mean, hey, listen. I mean, we always joke about the over-the-top coverage that Toronto Maple Leafs get. Like, it's all Leafs. You almost think that the Leafs are playing in the conference finals right now, too, with all the coverage around them. Yet, here we are talking about them as well. But what I get is, what gets me is, like, all of a sudden, it's in vogue to do a ton of trade proposals.
Yes.
You know, and we've seen them in the past as well, but it's like now everybody has all these trade ideas and a trade machine's begun and being churned up and everything. And I'm just kind of sitting here going, remember when Leafs fans got super, super mad when we talked about trading Chris Tanev for Liljegren and a first-round pick?
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, you stupid Vancouver people. And here, you know, here we have like every single publication coming up with these ridiculous trade proposals to help the Leafs.
Well, they know they've got to trade one of the core four. So that's part of the discussion here. And I just, you know, I want to throw this out there because I thought it was a quality trade proposal. Maybe more so for Vancouver's perspective.
Yeah, okay. So
it's William Nylander and Timothy Liljegren for JT Miller.
And a fourth round pick.
And no, then sending Matt Murray to Chicago for a bunch of picks.
Yeah, but the fourth round pick goes to Toronto, and Toronto uses that fourth round pick and another fourth round pick to get rid of Matt Murray. Yeah. So you're still giving up the fourth round pick here, right?
Fair enough, yes.
Again, it's just, I mean, just a fourth is a fourth, but we, you know, Canucks have a few of them.
To make the money work.
Yeah, to make the money work. So you're getting a righty defenseman.
Yes.
He's a talented player.
Yes.
Happy to add him to the group. Sure.
Yeah.
I like William Nylander a lot.
Yeah.
The question I have, though, is he going to play center or wing?
Probably wing.
Right.
He's played very limited minutes at center.
Right.
Through his entire career.
And what are you paying him? He wants probably north of nine.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say?
Yep. So he's right now he's at 6'9". Nice. And after this contract, he's getting at least 8+.
Yeah.
Around 9. Like he was just over a point a game this year. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big Willie Nylander fan. Like, I like his game a lot. I know a lot of people don't like him and some of the defensive stuff they worry about, but I think there's a lot there with him. I actually think he could play center as well. I mean, the way you view JT as a center, but maybe a winger, I think you could do the same thing.
With William Nylander?
To some degree, right? Although defensively, not that JT's been great defensively, but still, there are some questions about, you know, what you can rely on from him playing down the middle.
Yeah.
In terms of swapping the players, I think that's great. In terms of roster construction, if he doesn't play center, you're paying another winger a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, where's your center coming from? I'm not against, I mean, I think value-wise, you're getting Willie Nylander.
So you're saying the Canucks then have a second-line center problem?
Yeah.
In this trade?
Yes, a big one. And they have
a really big one.
Yeah, and they're adding more to the cap. Like, right. Nylander's contract is going to cost you more than whatever JT's getting paid.
Yes. It's going to be more expensive, yes. For sure.
He's younger, and I get it. It just doesn't solve much for you outside of getting Liljegren.
Liljegren is a nice piece.
He is a nice piece.
It's a right shot D that you can, I would say, comfortably slot in on your second pair. Now that you have Hronek, you know, you'd have at least two guys that profile as top four guys in your top four on the right side. There's not a ton of teams in the league that can say that. So, you know, there's some things I like about that deal.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I don't think it's realistic.
I think
though.
From Toronto's perspective, it's probably not a favorite. But that's also due to JT Miller's reputation around the league.
Okay, so the JT thing, right? When we look at JT's season, and he has flaws, we all know this. His production, he still ended up getting 80 points.
Yeah.
Point per game pace.
Yep.
$8 million over 7 years. You've seen the contracts handed out after that.
Yep.
You've seen what Bo Horvat got.
Yep.
Is it a ridiculous contract? Like, it's, I mean, I can see if it doesn't age well, but.
So the 8x7.
Eight by seven, yes.
Is it a ridiculous contract?
Is it easier for the Canucks to trade JT Miller for value or Toronto to trade Mitch Marner for value?
Whoa.
One guy's making over $10 million on the cap. One guy's making $8 million on the cap. That's pretty significant. The guy's making like 22% more.
Yeah.
24%.
I mean, one guy's a Selke finalist, though.
No, I understand, but he's still making 10.9.
And scores close to 100 points every year.
JT at 99.
The thing that works against Marner is, like, how many $10 million wingers are there in the league?
Yeah, and you have 3 years of control remaining.
Like, the other $10 million winger in the league is who? Jonathan
Huberdeau? Yeah.
Matthew Tkachuk's not even making.
Panarin, Pasternak?
Yeah, Panarin, Pasternak will have his new deal kick in next year. Matthew Tkachuk is under 10.
Yeah, 9.5.
9.5. That's really it. Patrick Kane. Which expired this year.
Yeah,
so
$10 million.
He's not getting that beyond this year.
No, and I just wonder, some of the stuff we've heard about Marner, too, is that they have to retain on trading him, potentially. Toronto would have to, because it's 10 points.
You think the salary cap is in such a place that you would have to retain on Mitch Marner?
He's making over $10 million. Yeah. How many teams have
close
$10
million? To 11.
Yeah, like, it's essentially $11 million per season. Like, how many teams have that cap space? So not you're not many. Retaining, you're taking money back. You're taking a contract back. So that's why you're hearing more, it's going to be a hockey trade. That's why you hear the proposals for Marner, too. It's like Marner for another guy, Marner for like Miller, even somebody threw that out there. You know, would Toronto consider doing something along those lines?
Yeah.
But even that for Vancouver, it's like, yeah, you're getting the better player. He's younger, but it's 3 years at $11 million, and it's going to cost you a lot to keep him afterwards. Like, it messes up your entire cap situation. It doesn't make sense for Vancouver that already has a really troublesome cap situation.
I think with... So is the question, would you rather have JT Miller's contract or Mitch Marner's?
Okay, let me pose this to you. Would you rather have Mitch Marner 3 years at 10.9, JT Miller 7 years at 8 million, or Jonathan Huberdeau 8 years at, how much is he getting paid? 10 and a half.
Well, Huberdeau is last on the list.
Yeah, easily.
It's not even a conversation. So the thing about this, Marner helps you get to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But I would rather have JT Miller in a playoff series than Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
I think Marner is one of those guys that's just never going to be that impactful in a playoff series.
Yeah.
You look at his numbers in, you know, games 4 through 7 in a series, he is a ghost.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah. I know he scored in that game 4, you know, but.
But what impact is he making?
Yeah,
from what you would normally see from him?
He scored in that game 4 against Florida, but if you watch the game, he didn't play all that well and scored a bit of a fluky goal. He is a ghost when it comes to the playoffs and always has been. And if you want to dive into analytical numbers, you can do that too and look and find that he just does not get to the slot area during a playoff series.
It's harder to get there in the postseason. And he doesn't get there in the playoffs as much.
I think JT's power game definitely sets up better in a playoff series.
JT struggled in the playoffs early in his career when he was in New York.
Yeah.
But when he played in Tampa, he was pretty decent. And one run they had in Vancouver, he was really good. If we're basing it on what he can do and what he did in Vancouver, if he got into the playoffs, I think you can see something there from him.
You know what the Canucks haven't done, though?
Make the playoffs?
Make the playoffs.
Yes.
And you know who helps you make the playoffs?
Mitch Marner.
Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
And also, in terms of the contract, like, he's younger, you're out of it in 3 years. I don't know. To me, it's out of those three, Mitch Marner is the very easy choice.
Yeah, I don't know if it's easy choice. He may still end up being the choice, but, like, it's trouble. Like, how do you add $10.9 million onto your books?
It's difficult for sure, but I think long-term it just makes more sense.
Like, is Vancouver better with Marner at 10.9 for 3 years or JT? Because how are you paying for your center now?
Yeah.
Sorry, my headphones.
You playing Mitch Marner at center?
Yeah, I mean, unless you think he can play center, which, I mean, sure. Like, I mean, JT was playing wing mostly and then came and played center in Vancouver this past, you know, 2 years. I mean, there is precedent. There are players capable of it. I'm not against it as long as you can get somebody to play center. Like, position, like, we've been sitting here talking so much about this team needs centers, right? They have two. And I'm fine with trading one. You got to find another one, though.
Yeah.
And if you're allocating that much money, then I think it's going to be hard for you to solve your center issue when you're paying all these guys a lot of money on the wings, right? But I'd say from market value, I'd still say Marner is number one. I'd say JT 2 and then Huberdeau 3.
I'd assume there's corresponding moves as well, right? Like, if you bring Marner in, you have to be sure that you're going to move Garland as well or Besser as well.
Yeah.
Just because, A, he's going to take up one of their spots, and B, you're going to need that extra cap.
Trade one of those guys for new Brandon Sutter, Christian Dvorak.
Yeah. Easy. Done.
This is more a question about the Canucks roster construction than it is about player value, because in a vacuum, you'd probably look at it and say, yeah, I'd rather have Mitch Marner. I don't trust Mitch Marner in a playoff series.
Those
I feel that. Like,
matter.
I've seen it enough to know, like, this guy just is not going to be a strong player in the postseason. So as long as that is the case, it's going to affect how I feel about the player. Now, at the end of the day, it's hard to argue that Mitch Marner in the regular season brings more value than a player like JT Miller.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he does, right? I mean, you even see it from the production, but you're also paying a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
You know, like you're, I know some of the models have him as a player making more, like being worth more than 10.9 based on his regular season play. Like, but it's not like significantly more based on like actual, like if you look at it from output and comparisons and actually how much money is being spent and impact. But the issue that that Toronto's running into here, and I think that's why they would have to even consider a JT1, is Tavares can't play center.
No.
Nylander, they don't view as a center.
No.
Ryan O'Reilly's a free agent.
Yes. And Ryan O'Reilly and John Tavares playing together did not work.
No, and
it's too slow.
What have we said about Vancouver and their situation? They're not teams can leverage them. They're capped out. They have a lot of redundancies. No one's going to throw them a lifeline.
Yeah.
think anybody's throwing Toronto a lifeline? Like, they can trade Mitch Marner, but I think what their best bet is trying to make a deal for a JT Miller type.
Yeah.
Like, outside of that, you're up against it. Everyone knows you need centers. They know what you need to do. They know that Nylander has to be a sacrifice, potentially.
They know you want to make a change.
Yeah, so if Marner is going to get traded, nobody's going to give you full value for him.
No.
And I think that they would have to consider those types of deals.
I think you have to. It's still, like, I would still look at Toronto's now GM vacancy and say that it is the most attractive of those that are out there and available. Calgary's.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh's.
Yeah.
Like, not really a hard question. Like, Calgary's in a really tough spot right now, and Pittsburgh, while they have Crosby and Malkin and Letang, they don't have much else.
Yeah.
So it's, and Gensel, but, you know, Pittsburgh, it's tough to see them being able to turn it around and being a true cup contender in a beastly Eastern Conference. A little bit of just a quick note here, because we talked about this on the show earlier in the week. Frank Saravalli, our Monday Hockey Insider, hearing Flames have reconsidered their approach with former GM Brad Treliving after our Daily Faceoff report last week and will not get in the way of any future employment opportunities arise before his contract expires on June 30th. So a lot of people wondering if Brad Treliving could be the next GM of the Maple Leafs.
Treliving to the Leafs?
Toronto Canucks incoming.
Well, hey, now JT's definitely going to Toronto.
Like, yeah. I think Brad Treliving did a fine job in Calgary, but he seems to get a lot of clout around some hockey insiders because they really seem to be pushing him towards new jobs. And certainly when this news about Dubas came out today, it was like everybody's ready to like, oh, that's Brad Treliving's job. Like, is it really that simple?
Relationship building is important.
Yes.
For coaches, especially ones who want to, you know, be in the forefront. That's not to say that, you know, all the reporting on this is coming from an area of bias,
yeah,
in that sense, right? Like, I'm not trying to say that. But I think, you know, from him, he's smart in having good relations with a lot of, you know,
yes,
powerful media people.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think that's a smart thing that he does in terms of having his name out there. But I also think he has a reputation as a deal maker. And I think people do around the league respect Brad Treliving. People say it's very hard to make trades. They,
yes,
say it's very hard to make moves. Who's the guy who's maybe the most aggressive in doing moves? It's, yeah, probably been Brad Treliving.
He made, obviously, the Tkachuk one last, yeah, year. Even the Hanifin-Lindholm deal he,
yeah,
made,
yeah,
for Dougie Hamilton,
yeah,
with Carolina years ago. Now, that was a massive trade,
yeah,
right? We were wondering what trade was going to break on day one of the draft that year. And,
yeah,
then we had to wait till day two, and it was like, holy bombshell.
There we go, right? And he, yeah, made the Toffoli trade to acquire him. He's made other trades. He's been very active in it, very active in free agency. He has a reputation of a guy who gets things done.
Yeah.
And people say it's very hard to make deals in the NHL. It's very hard to make moves and improve your roster. So sometimes even if you disagree with the moves and you disagree with the ultimate success they've had, I think people look at him and say he's a guy able to do things.
Yeah.
And people like that. So I think that plays a big part into his reputation. And I think he kind of fits with Shanahan, I think.
You know, one of the things, just to kind of close this conversation, and even relate it to Vancouver, because, look, I know people have not agreed. I didn't agree with the Hronek trade, at least the timing of it, and the direction that this franchise is taking to try and turn it around so quickly and be a playoff team as early as,
yeah,
next year. Didn't really feel like a pathway with a high probability of success.
Yeah.
But they've chosen that path. And I can see that path. And I can see what they are trying to build, even with Rick Tocchet and some of the cohesive messaging that has come from coach and management about the way they want the team to play and how they expect to build a winner.
Mm-hmm.
So I disagree with some of the moves, but I can at least see a pathway forward, or I understand what they're trying to do. The one thing I will say about Dubas is it's like he built out his top six and then really spent a lot of time trying to build out a different identity through the rest of the team.
Right.
It's like we have all of this offensive talent. And after those first couple of years, well, it's not getting us over the hump. We need a little bit more grit and sandpaper and all these types of things. So we're going to try and backfill that at the end of our roster. And it never really worked.
No.
And it almost felt awkward in the way that it was built, in that you're trying to be two different things at once.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're trying towards the end to fill some of those holes and be like, now all of a sudden we're going to try to be this. But I mean, we're going to talk to Yannick coming up in a bit too. And we'll, you know, I kind of ask him about the trend and what we're seeing and everything. But they never built out a proper bottom six, to your point.
Yeah.
You know, and we hear this a lot around the league, right? I remember people saying, like, you know, you have to have more skilled guys. You have to have more skilled guys. And that's great. But you also need to have players who know how to play certain roles. Like, you need to have guys that are good on the PK, that are good defensively, that do certain things. Not every line is going to score for you. You need to have balance, you know, and getting away from a lot of that, you know, the top nine. I mean, we ranted about this during the season. There was one point I'm like, I'm sick and tired of hearing about top nine.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here with your top nine stuff. Like, if sure, I'm all for a really talented top nine, but if your third line center isn't a Cirelli type,
yes,
or if your third line center isn't a guy who can kill penalties and you don't have a third line wing who can do those things as well, it doesn't matter. You can't have three skilled centers who can't PK. You can't have, you know, six forwards on the wings that can't PK but are talented. You're not going to have a good team doing that.
Yeah. You got to be able to have a well-balanced team.
Yeah, guys who can do different things.
This text, do you think the value of players like JT, Besser, and Garland would be easier to move or have increased value if the Canucks had more playoff appearances? I'd rather have JT over Marner and Nylander in the playoffs. Canucks haven't had enough playoff appearances. And
no.
That, I don't know how much it takes away from the value of your players, but there is quite clearly a bigger microscope on your team when more people are watching during the postseason.
Yes, I do think that. I would say, though, that the reputation JT has with the media, or at least in this market, with a lot of fans and on social media, isn't really reflective of how the league views JT Miller.
Right.
Like, I think we always have to be very careful in assuming, you know, what's gets said locally by fans and by media, and whether that's a true reflection of the industry. And it sometimes is. Oftentimes, however, there is more there that doesn't make it quite as simple. And I think to that point, as much as even JT throughout the season, there was talks about him struggling and people said, oh, the contract's such an albatross, it can't get rid of it now. And it's like, no, there are still teams interested. Yeah, there were some teams that were nibbling, trying to get him for free. Sure, Carolina, we heard. But even Pittsburgh, I know whether it was true or not, I think there were teams that looked at it and said, like, we're willing to give you something here to make this happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, hey, salary dump, take a bad contract in return. It's like, no, this is a good player. If we get him, not give up too much, sure, because Vancouver's not leveraged. But at no point did I hear people looked at JT and said, no, he's untouchable, terrible player, terrible contract, can't even go near him.
Yeah. It's like I said, when the Canucks first signed the contract, if he got to free agency, there's no way he wasn't getting something in this range.
Probably 8x7, yep. Or like maybe 8.5/7.
Yep.
Or 8.2.
So, you know, especially with the way that he ended the season, he would have had a lot of suitors. We see what the free agent class is going to be this year. It's not great. Horvat ended up getting 8.5 off of the really strong first half of the season that
Horvat got the contract people thought JT was going to get.
Yes. And it was mostly because of the first half of the season he had, because up until then, if we're being honest about it, never had the production that would get you an $8.5 million type of contract.
Hey, he hit it big at the perfect time.
He hit it big at the perfect time. You know, he had an Aaron Judge-like contract season.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But it's, you know, when I look at JT, I understand the entirety of the contract is probably not going to be great. But I think a lot of GMs around the league also see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They view it as, can this guy help me get over the hump in the next 3-4 years?
And, you know, roundabout way, we're going to get out here in a second.
Yeah.
You have Yannick coming up. A roundabout way to look at this, and even the exercise we did comparing Marner's contract and comparing Huberto's contract, and Josh makes a great point about Marner. He's clearly the best player out of the three.
Yeah.
But because of the contract, it makes it look seem a bit iffy. But look at all these players and teams looking to make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the contracts and the situations they find themselves in. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying Vancouver's going to be looking to trade JT, but I think a lot of people are going to come calling on JT. And I think that's a reason why we've heard Patrick Alvin not say he's not getting traded.
Yeah.
As much as he doesn't expect it, he wants to keep him here. You start comparing around the league, you look at players, the free agent market, like, is it inconceivable somebody comes knocking and gives them a type of offer they may say yes to? I mean, when you look at the other options.
Yeah. Could be a wild draft day this year.
Yeah.
As we get closer to it.
Yeah.
Especially with another flat cap season. Teams are going to be trying to wheel and deal and do something to make things happen. All right. Coming up, Yannick Hansen, our Friday hockey analyst on Canuck Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Dranz. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Canuck Central in the Kintech studio. It is Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Still to come, the mailbag, your questions for us here on Canuck Central. But right now, it's Friday, so you know what that means. It's Yannick Hansen joining us, our Friday hockey analyst. This analyst is brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Thanks for this, Yannick. How are you?
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm good. How are you?
We're good. A little bit of sleepy eyes. You know, it's not often a game on the West Coast finishes 11:30 Pacific time, which is what happened with the game one of the Eastern Conference Final between Florida and Carolina. Brought back memories of the 07 game, but in the 07 game, you didn't come in until game two. Did you? Were you up for the whole game? Like, did you stay up watching that thing?
No, I did not. I was in Winnipeg.
That's right.
So that's kind of the reason. I want to say three, if not four, guys went down in that game.
Yeah.
Kess, Burr, Cookie, and there might have been one more guy that got injured in that game one. And that was kind of that's how I got in. Then myself, Smitty, I want to say Brandon Reed got called up in that whole shebang there. So I wasn't in Vancouver. I didn't play. But obviously we saw it in Winnipeg and it went later and later, and now we're turning it off. We got our own stuff to worry about at that point as well, and lo and behold, you get in the call the next day.
Yeah, I think it was like even Tommy Santala got hurt too. I think he even got injured in that first game. Matt Cook, I think, got injured in that first game because it was a long game, right? I was at that game actually, and it ended before midnight local time. And that allowed the call up for you to get into the lineup in the playoffs later that year. That same playoffs,
yeah,
right?
It was right after the next day we got the call.
Yeah.
Like I said, there was almost a handful that went down, and not like Burr, I only think, sat out for one or two games or something like that. He got dinged up a little bit. Kess was a little bit more significant. Cookie, I don't think, came back and played at all anymore. I don't think if he got back in either. So, yeah, there were some significant injuries, that's for sure. But that's what it does. It is the toil, and the groins, the hips, and all that stuff. You start pushing through once you've reaching 3 and 4 hours. It's an injury waiting to happen. The fatigue and all these things, and you're straining, and all of a sudden you explode out of a battle, and something goes wrong.
What's happening in between periods in those long OT games?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You're eating and drinking, trying to stay, and it's impossible. Like that, you can drink as much as you want, but it's the salt that's gonna get you. So you always try to keep ahead of that and make sure you're getting your electrolytes in during as well. But like you said, you cannot replenish it fast enough, especially the guys that play a lot. That's why you see the IVs afterwards, because then you can get it straight in instead of going through your belly and through your system and stuff like that. So it is, it's bananas, it's oranges, and it's drinking, and it's quiet. Just, you don't want to make that mistake that's going to end the game, because that's what it most likely comes down to. It's not going to be tic-tac pretty plays. It's somebody who turns a puck over, that rims it, that doesn't get out, gets picked off, point shot through traffic. It's always something like that. So you try to play it as safe as possible, and then hopefully you're going to get that bounce, the relief. And even when you're on the wrong side of that, it's like, it's over. Because I could imagine even last night, like Carolina, yeah, it sucks losing, but like we need to get this game over with. We got game two coming up here really fast as well.
Yeah, you kind of wonder sometimes, like, how are they ever going to score? Because the energy's not there to get to the net as much. It becomes a real grind to try and get those high-danger chances. But I kind of want to know from your perspective, you know, so, okay, there's that game one against Dallas. Goes to 4 OT. Canucks win it. You get the call up the next day. It's your NHL debut. Is Alain Vigneault just like, don't screw up, Yannick? Is that his message?
No, he actually said, go out and play the way you have been. Later on, I got told that it was more or less Scott Arneil's call, because they said we need this in our mm-hmm. lineup, and he said, well, that's Yannick. So when I walked in there, I'm sure AB hadn't seen me play in the minor all year.
Right.
So he's relying on the guy who's coached me for the last 72 games. He's like, go out, play your game. And again, my game was forechecking, so he wanted me to get in there, push the pace. Obviously, with us getting three fresh set of legs in there, we had a little bit of extra jam maybe. You weren't tired in the same way as guys that have played seven periods of playoff hockey 30 hours earlier. So again, you could go in and then you could really push the pace. So I was sure when AV started that game, he didn't anticipate me play as much as I did. But one shift turned into two, turned into 10 minutes. I think I got in the low teens, which there's no chance I would have gotten that on another night if things hadn't worked out.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, wrapping things up on that playoff, that was a blindside hit by Rob on you, wasn't it? Game 5?
Yeah, overtime? But that was allowed that back.
Yeah, I guess so.
So you could also target the head as long as there was all these rules. It was again, I've seen the play many times, and it's not predatory. He's gliding into me. It's not like he's, okay, I'm gonna get this guy. He did get me. I have no ill will against that hit. I did get hurt. My own fault. Maybe the Zamboni guys as well. Too much snow sitting in the on the boards there, so the puck gets stuck, and yeah. I'm trying to scrape for it, and it doesn't come. And then by the time it comes, he's there. It's obviously an easy play to find if you YouTube game-winning goal.
Yeah.
Well, Luongo thought it should be a penalty.
He definitely did, and that's what again. It sucked that we went out on that one because,
yeah.
again, it's switching side here, but he was phenomenal back then.
That game.
He was phenomenal in that series, that Dallas as well. Like, we had no business competing with Anaheim, obviously. They were a much deeper, better team, but he was, shut it down. Like, you score a couple goals for him and we win.
Okay,
it was that simple.
What's the single best game you've seen Luongo play? Was it that game? Was it Game 7 against the Blackhawks? Like, what game stands out to you for, like, this was the best performance I've ever seen?
It was that first playoff series I played with him there against Dallas, yeah. and then into Anaheim. Because we were a better team than Dallas. Again, I'm saying that I was brand new to the team, but again, I felt like we were a better team when you look at the lineups. But still, we needed goaltending. And then going into the Anaheim series, Anaheim was much deeper, much better. And still, we were in that losing overtimes and stuff like that. And like I said, he stood on his head. He felt like he was impossible to score on in practice. And it just it carried over into the games where you're like, yeah, like if we score two goals, we're going to win this game. There's no doubt in our mind. And that feeling is a phenomenal feeling to have. Obviously, the league kind of changed. They got a little bit more high scoring. And then it's like, okay, we don't need just two more to win games. Now we need that third one, and then we're sure. But that wasn't because his play took a dive in any way. That's just because instead of getting up and giving up three, four, five quality chances, now you're giving up seven, eight, nine, and shooters will score. It's just as simple as that.
Yannick Hansen, our guest. Do you appreciate the way teams like Carolina and even Florida, the way they've played in these playoffs, can, you know, just play a very patient, wait for the mistake to happen type of game, hard on the forecheck, dump it in, get it out of your own end when you can, like those just very safe hockey? Can you appreciate that, even though maybe it isn't always the highest entertainment value with run-and-gun hockey, chances going back either way?
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of it. I will say there's a couple of those teams left that still does that. And is that why? I said, I think it was last week or it was on Tuesday with Bic, that if Edmonton and Toronto goes through, maybe this is the year where we say it's not the defense that's going to win your championship, it's the offense. But then Edmonton bows out to a better D in Vegas. Carolina is obviously very good on a D as well. So there might still be some merit to that if you can shut down, play a safe and gritty game, maybe you can find your way through. And it's not like Florida is run and gun either. They have some very good checkers as well and some fine defensemen. But it's again, it has been a different feel to these playoffs than maybe also last year, but before that than what it used to be.
Well, I mean, and we've been discussing this a little bit in terms of the teams that are playing the good structured hockey. They're the ones that are having success. Are we getting to a point now where the game is getting so loose and has been so loose, the teams that play the right way are going to be the ones that, you know, make the difference?
Again, it's up to the individual here to decide, because it's so hard to put into, okay, this is the style that's going to win. I think when you shift it from your role players into now we need four lines that can play and produce and contribute, as soon as you did that, you open up the game. Because now it's not just the goals are being scored while your number one and number two line is on the ice. Now the goals can get scored throughout the lineup. The chances that are being presented to these players are much more skilled players that are used to scoring in bunches when they come through juniors, come through minors, before they make it in. So they can put it in the net when they get the opportunity as well. The game shifted and everything, but still you look at a game like last night, and it is like, if you're able to turn it and keep them on the outside, and Carolina did a phenomenal job on that, it's almost like they're just going through, and I'm not saying going through the motion in a bad way here, they're just playing their game, tons of pucks on net, keeping Florida to the outside, and then just hoping that through quality quantity kind of thing, you're going to get your bounces, you're going to get possession in your offensive zone, leads to power plays, leads to goals. And then, there is the odd one where you're going to need some luck as well. That's why a playoff is a fantastic thing. But the teams that are good throughout their lineup from the beginning of regular season to the end of regular, they rely on structure, systems, and their ability to win them games, not individual performances and exceptional goaltending performance like Bobrovsky in order to win. When you have it, it's great. But relying on it is a little bit harder. But obviously, these guys can't get hot. But that's where, as a better team, and I still think Carolina is a better team, even though they're down, you have to rely on your structure and what have gotten you there, and then filter through.
What can you do when a goalie is as hot as Bobrovsky is right now?
Traffic, traffic. He sees it, he stops it. So you get traffic, and you hope that you get an ugly one. That's kind of the way. Again, their power play is very good in Carolina as well. So you can hope that the offensive zone will lead to power play opportunities. But it's very, very frustrating. And doubt can creep in very, very fast when you lose this way versus if it would have been a shootout where both goalies would have given up 5-7 goals. And then you win that way. It's like, okay, there's no way Freddie Anderson gives them seven next night, but we're still getting our goals. When you're playing against a goalie who has the ability to steal games, that can creep in your mind really, really fast, because as soon as you start going on, it's like, oh, we need perfect plays. We need backdoor tap-ins, otherwise he's saving them. And now you're not taking these extra shots that might be able to get you these lucky, fluky goals that'll get you a little bit of momentum.
How much more punishment are you taking in front of the net in a playoff series than you would during the regular season?
Well, there's no question the refs put the whistles away yesterday towards those OT 2, 3, 4 versus how it was called early. So more is allowed, but I will also say players, you take a little bit of a step back. The battles become a little bit different because you're conserving energy when the game runs this long. You're fighting and battle for pucks, but all it takes is a power play as well. So you're careful where 5-10 years ago, like you lose an arm in front of net, no question. And then the ref would look at you like there was a clean play. Okay, sure, if you say so. But I will say up until, like I said, OT 2, 3, 4 last night, I feel like the games have been played or called almost as they were in the regular season. It's not like they've put the whistles away. Mm-hmm. So whether that's a memo that's gone out, I don't know. But it feels like a lot of that offense we're talking about, higher scoring games, comebacks in playoffs, that stems from that as well. Because there's so many skilled guys now, and we see how many of these power plays, mm-hmm. even LA that was out first, like their power play was phenomenal.
Yeah.
They get a chance, and it gets them right back into games that maybe you would have been out of otherwise, when maybe you would have gotten one or two power plays.
I mean, and yeah, and we're seeing a lot of that, right? I mean, with and I think, I mean, bigger picture-wise, we can still talk about, you know, guys defending and the art of defending on the PK, and I think it's harder than people realize nowadays, too, especially with how the game is changing. Like you mentioned, I mean, we don't have as many bottom six players and more skilled guys. You're trying to get skilled guys to learn how to PK. You are going to see some variance, obviously. But, you know, moving off what we're seeing on the ice to what's happening off the ice, there's always drama in Canadian markets, and you know what it's like in Vancouver, and it's obviously a lot more even in Toronto, but some pretty sizable news with Kyle Dubas not coming back, essentially being let go, fired ahead of his contract ending in about a month's time, after Brendan Shanahan today said, essentially, we weren't willing to accept his contract demands last night, and we're not quite sure he's fully in to do this job. What do you make of Kyle Dubas no longer being the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, I think obviously you pigeonholed Edmonton and Toronto and this kind of together, because they're so much alike in terms of where their teams are. It seems like they're almost on the cusp of greatness, great cores and stuff like that. But Toronto, it feels like they're further removed. It seems like it's a harder fix. Everybody talks about the core four, and it keeps coming back to them. Being, I almost say the issue, because they disappear. You don't get the scoring, don't get the wins from them when you need it the most. And again, that was Dubas' bet. He bet on these four guys. You're paying them half the cap, and then you really, really need them. We're shifting to Edmonton. You're paying a lot of money to two guys as well, but they don't disappear the same way. Edmonton is a goalie issue. And I'd say it's easier, and I do this in quotation, it's easier to find a goalie for Edmonton than it is to make significant changes to core four in Toronto and then see what you have coming back. So, again, Dubas bet on these four guys, and they've got him past the first round once, yeah, but then they flooded out the exact same way as they've done in the past 4 years.
It's interesting now, like as a GM, Dubas, you know, he mentioned earlier this week that Toronto's the only place that he would go, and now this whole contract negotiation goes haywire. But if you're just looking at it from a hockey perspective, like, there's Calgary's open right now, Pittsburgh is open right now, and now Toronto's open for GM vacancies. If you were looking at those teams and saying, which is the one that's closest to winning, it's obviously Toronto. So if you're Dubas, like, even if you have the pick of all three of those markets, like, Toronto's still the one that's closest to winning, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And again, I speak from personal feelings here. I'd rather be in a demanding market where the city lives, country lives and breathes it. There's pressure on you. But when you're winning, and again, that's what we're talking about. These teams are close to winning, that there's nothing better. You're going to get a lot of heck for your move that goes wrong. But again, why would you want to sit in an anonymous down in some state? And yeah, you have the same responsibility and you're trying to do the same thing, but like, this is Canada's game. So again, if you're a GM and you want to GM a franchise, like, Toronto of those three would obviously be my pick as well. So again, it's always hard to quantify what goes on behind the conversations here, behind closed doors, and what the issues really are. But again, you're a GM. There's only 32 openings, and you might have the best one in the league, and you're letting it slip away. And again, does he want it? You're saying, is there something with family going on as well? Like, you don't know that, but mm-hmm. if you want to be a GM, then this is the spot.
One of the things that we've also been is that there is a close link between Kyle Dubas and Austin Matthews. They have a strong relationship, and Matthews reiterated that he wanted to stay in Toronto, but now obviously we'll see with the new GM if that changes anything. But from a player's perspective, especially if you look at a star player like that, how much consideration goes into the relationship you have with a general manager when it comes to your desire to stay somewhere?
Yeah, no, I'm going to speak like I know what a star player thinks here in these games. Cyril, I don't think he cares.
Yeah.
Who's the GM. He's going to get his money. He's going to get it from wherever he wants to go because he's free. He's free from a year from now. So if that's what he wants to do, he can be free in a year and he'll get paid. The question comes back to where does he want to get paid? Does he want to go to the U.S. where he can leave the rink and nobody knows him? Only him can know that himself. So again, when we talk relationship, and there was just a big thing, obviously, in Calgary right now with Sutter. But that's different because that's your coach. And your coach you're seeing every day, all the time, meetings, influencing, all these things, where the GM, there's so little interaction after you sign the contract. And not even when you sign the contract or you're interacting with. It was Gilman from my case. So it was just once in a while when we weren't doing well, you got called into Gillis's office and asked if you'd like to be in Winnipeg instead of Vancouver. But that was about it for conversation with me and Gillis. So it doesn't matter who sits at the top there, especially not for a player like that. At least that's what I think.
Yannick, we always appreciate the time and the insights. Have a great long weekend.
Yeah, you too. Enjoy.
There is Yannick Hansen, our Friday hockey analyst, always bringing great insights here on Canuck Central.
Fantastic, as always. And the whole, he's like, man, athletes just want money and a chance to win. That's it. Pay the guy. He doesn't give a you-know-what who the GM is. Just give me paid and give me a decent team to play for.
That's it. Does it really matter to Austin Matthews all that much? Like, if the Leafs are willing to give him, like, $13 million this offseason, per season.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, like, even
most of these guys, they have enough confidence in themselves that they're like, we'll figure out a way to win with me here.
Yeah, and even Dubas himself was saying, like, you know, this was tough on my family, but then says last night, I want to come back, but for this much money. It was really tough on my family, but it makes it a lot easier if you give me this much money.
Yes, so for this money.
It's like we always say, everyone has a price for pretty much any job.
Ted DiBiase with the salient thought for everybody.
Yes.
Everybody's got a price. The million dollar man always knew. All right, coming up, the mailbag. Keep getting your questions in. We have some great ones coming in. I see you, Corbett, on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We'll get more through Twitter and on 650. We'll get to your questions next in the mailbag on Canuck Central.